Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Greetings and welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'll be with you for the next half hour, shining the spotlight on an anniversary, UNESCO's Biodiversity Day. And on a Latin American role model, fellow countryman to CELAM's president. Well, thanks so much for joining me. The 22nd of May marks World Day for Biological Diversity, sponsored by the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO. And the theme chosen for this day this year is a timely one. It's biodiversity and climate change, and looking at the links between the two. Timely because, as we all know, global concern over climate change has picked up dramatically over the past year, amid mounting evidence about the negative impact of this phenomenon. Pope Benedict joined his voice to those encouraging the protection of our planet and respect for the environment. His appeal came in a message sent to participants at a recent conference focusing precisely on climate change, which was held in the Vatican. My colleague Susie Hodges has been finding out more about why climate change and loss of biodiversity go hand in hand, and indeed how religion can play a vital role in alerting people to this twin menace facing our planet. Stay tuned.
Scientists predict that up to 1 million species may become extinct as a result of climate change. And already many species are being forced to adapt to the warming of our planet through shifting habitat or changing life cycles. Experts say the links between biodiversity and climate change can run both ways. In other words, biodiversity is threatened by human-induced climate change, but biodiversity resources can reduce the impact of climate change on people. Ahmed Joglaf is Executive Secretary of the UN Convention on Biological Diversity, based in Montreal, Canada. He told me more about how climate change and loss of biodiversity are one of the most important moral issues facing our planet today.
We have expert meetings from 95 countries that have demonstrated that climate change is now one of the main root causes of the unprecedented loss of biodiversity. They have also demonstrated that climate change is not only a technological issue, it's not only a financial issue, it's not only a scientific issue, it is also an environmental issue, and it's also a biodiversity issue. Biodiversity can contribute through the forests, through the ocean, through the wetland, through the healthy ecosystem, to the health of the planet. And therefore, we have always called to the need to look at these two major global threats for our planet in a mutually supportive manner. So there is strong evidence that climate change is affecting all ecosystems without any exception, and they are affecting all people without any exception, but those who will suffer the most and those who will pay the highest price are those who have less contributed to the climate change. So there is an ethical issue, and there is an issue of global solidarity. And therefore, I really welcome the meeting of the Vatican on this issue of climate change. I think it's high time for us to highlight the spiritual and the religious dimension of the environment. And therefore, we need to engage all the faiths. And therefore, I want to pay tribute to the meeting convened in the Vatican on climate change.
In fact, what concrete role do you believe the Catholic Church and other faith communities can play then to help raise awareness of this critical issue and persuade people of the moral need to modify their lifestyles to reduce carbon emissions?
I think they have a fundamental role. You take the Catholic, you take the Islam, you take the Buddhism, you take all the religion, the Hinduism. They have the protection of nature as a duty. And I know that for the Catholic Church, protecting all kind of life is a moral and a religious duty, because every living organism is a creation of God. And therefore, we are here to protect the creation of God and not to destroy life. And destroying any kind of life, we are destroying our life. And the churches and the Catholic, I think they have a responsibility to educate and to bring, you know, the believer to their initial faith. Just to give you an example, I am very pleased here in Quebec that a number of churches have decided to draw the attention of those who follow the churches regarding the celebration of this International Day on Biodiversity, on the relationship between climate change and biodiversity, and they have referred to the meeting of Vatican and the statement of the Pope on the need to protect nature and the need to protect life on Earth. And I think this is a fundamental issue. The other is by showing the right example. When the church may promote, for example, clean energy, when they use, you know, in a sustainable manner the energy of their churches, I think they can make a major contribution. But the most important role, I think, is education and also to engage all the faith. In addition, it has been said, the major investors now are from the 11 faith communities, and they have a major driving in finance. So they can direct also the market, and they can also put their financial resources in promoting the green technologies and promoting, you know, best practices which can help us to protect life on Earth. So now that we are talking about dialogue about civilization and we are talking about the clash between Islam and Christianity, I think this issue, which is protecting life on Earth, which is embedded in all the religion, can be the cement to bring us together as a single community living in a single planet. And we have a responsibility to protect what God has given us and what God is asking us to protect for our children and for future generations.
Natarajan Iswaran is Director of Ecological and Earth Sciences at UNESCO in Paris. He agrees that religious leaders should all be involved in speaking out about the threats posed by climate change and the loss of biodiversity.
I think a global issue such as climate change and how we respond to mitigating the consequences of climate change and how we adapt in the future, I think that's everybody's business. I think everybody should think about it, talk about it, give their views on it. And I think Catholic Church and other major religious faiths and their concerned authorities must, of course, speak of their views on it. And it is important because science is coming out fairly strongly and unequivocally. And I think the religious denominations and their authorities speaking about these issues is important to draw the minds and attention of people to these issues. And I think there are adaptive changes needed for the future if we are going to address some of these global issues.
It's not just a case of publicising the dangers of climate change, but also persuading people across the globe of the need to modify our lifestyles and stop wasting our planet's resources. Joglaf again.
We have also to recognize that our attitude toward nature and our attitude toward service of nature cannot be sustained. It is proven scientifically if we have to have the same pattern of production and pattern of consumption than the citizen of the U.S. We need five planets. If we have the same model of consumption than the UK citizen, we need three planets, but we have only one. And we have to maintain and sustain this availability of resources to us and to future generations. So we need also to have, and there I think all the religion of the world, call for avoiding waste, using in a rational manner the resources. There's not a single religion which will encourage, you know, the waste. And we are wasting our resources. We are abusing nature and its bounty. And therefore, we need the religion to preach us, you know, how we behave and how we react and how we interact with the creation of God.
When it comes to the issue of biodiversity loss, Joglaf says the massive extinction of species can't just be shrugged off by us, as it will have a major impact on the future of humans as well.
Someone can argue, we have millions of species, so if you lose one or two, what's the big deal? What's the matter? But we know that we have a web of life, and each species is related to another species and to other ecosystems, and therefore it promotes the web of life and the protection of nature. We are responsible of this extension. And some experts, for example, are predicting by 2048, so in a couple of years, there will be no more fish in the ocean. And could you imagine, Susie, for yourself and for your children and for our children, a world without fish? And as you know, more than 3 billion people draw their livelihood from marine and coastal biodiversity. We know that we are destroying the rate of forest to almost 13 million hectares a year. So 1 billion people are living from forest resources. In addition, of course, to the carbon emission and the avoidance of carbon sink due to the destruction of forests. In addition, 80% of all the biodiversity recorded of the world are in tropical forests. It will have also far-reaching application on agriculture, the dry land, and therefore there will be a loss of productivity, while at the same time there will be an increase of population. So the experts are predicting that will be 9 billion people by 2030, and therefore we need more food, and therefore there will be less land available for agriculture purposes. So this to tell you that this is a major implication on just the mere existence of life on Earth.
Ishwaring points out that many prized species in the animal world, like the Asian elephant or great apes, risk dying out because of the effects of human-induced climate change.
It is likely that if the climate change shifts as they are predicted now happen, some of the big animals, what they call the flagship species, are likely to lose out on habitat. Because even now, their restriction to national parks and similar reserves is not a sufficient strategy because they still need space outside. But the outside habitats available for these wide-ranging species are all becoming restricted due to other needs for human land use. If climate change shifts happen and those are becoming unpredictable, these flagship species, the great apes, the elephants, the whales and others, their plight is going to be seriously threatened. The uncertainties behind their survival for the future is likely to grow. But then there is also the number of species out there in the millions, but there are predictions or there are estimates which take the numbers which we don't know into several millions more. And some of these climate change shifts might be driving some of the smaller unknown species to extinction even before we know them. So I guess not only are we likely to increase the threats for the survival of some of the species we look at or value culturally and otherwise, like the Asian elephant or the great apes, we are also likely to be losing many other species before we even document them. So it's a kind of twin threat.
A twin threat, but also an interlinked threat. As Joglif goes on to explain, we all have a role to play in the global web of life. That's why, he says, we need a healthy ecosystem for a healthy planet.
Forests, for example, are a major sink of carbon dioxide. So they absorb the CO2 emissions. The oceans are absorbing 30% of the emission. The wetland, the peatlands absorb carbon. But by destroying these resources, we are destroying the capacity of nature to protect its services and to regulate. The warming of the ocean, for example, will lead to disappearance of the plankton, and as you know, and the coral reef, bleaching of the coral reef. And coral reef are the nutrient for all the marine life. And the plankton also, the warming of the disappearance of the plankton will undermine the capacity of the ocean to absorb carbon. So therefore, there's a couple of examples on why we need a healthy ecosystem for a healthy planet. It is proven scientifically, Susie, that for every breath that we as human beings have, one, we owe it to the forest, to the oxygen that it has been emitting, and the other to the ocean. So just to tell you that nature and God has created, and therefore for each species, be it an animal or be it a plant, it has a role to play in the global web of life.
Well, thanks there go to Susie Hodges and to her guests today, who were the head of the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity and Climate Change, Ahmed Jaklaf, and the director of Ecological and Earth Sciences at UNESCO in Paris, Natarajan Ishvaran. Meanwhile, I'd like to turn my attention to Latin America once again. If you recall, it was barely a week ago when Pope Benedict returned from a pastoral journey to Brazil, where he went to open the fifth General Conference of CELAM, the Latin Americans Bishop Conference, a summit which is clearly currently still taking place as it closes on the 31st of May. On that occasion, on Sunday, May 13th, in Aparecida, some 200 bishops listened to the Pope's words as he suggested they attempt to find ways to protect the Catholic identity of Latin America and the Caribbean, inviting them to breathe new life into Christian identity, find renewed sense of mission when fighting secularism, hedonism, indifferentism, and proselytism by numerous sects and new pseudo-religious phenomena. But one of the events Pope Benedict presided over during the first half of that Brazilian journey was the canonization of Fray Antonio Galvão, a Franciscan buried in Sao Paulo, in the Mosteiro de Luz, which he had built and which is, point of fact, included as from 1988 as one of the places qualified to enter UNESCO's World Heritage List. Anyway, by canonizing Fray Galvão, Pope Benedict gave Brazil a role model to follow with this first native-born saint, adding also to the list of other saints from Latin America, including one from Chile who was canonized by Pope Benedict in Rome back in October 2005, and on whose tomb the last pope to attend a general conference of CELAM, Pope John Paul II, once prayed when he went to the nation's capital, Santiago de Chile, on a pastoral journey. A role model who also happens to be a fellow countryman of the current president of CELAM, Cardinal Francisco Javier Errázuriz Ossa, Archbishop of Santiago. His name, Alberto Hurtado Cruchaga, a Jesuit from Chile who lived in the first half of the 20th century. A charismatic figure, Cardinal Roberto Tucci, personally met many years ago in Louvain. Keep listening if you want to know the story.
Curso de mi visita pastoral a la iglesia en Chile.
The voice of the late Pope John Paul II speaking in Spanish during a pastoral journey to Chile. The date was April 3, 1987. The place, a monumental tomb right behind the central station in the urban hinterland of Chile's capital, Santiago. A tomb belonging to a Jesuit, Blessed Alberto Hurtado Cruchaga.
Siervo de Dios, Padre Alberto Hurtado Cruchaga.
The man who founded this Latin American nation's largest charity, the Hogar de Cristo.
Hogar de Cristo.
In English, Christ's Home, which today numbers over 20 affiliates in Santiago alone, and many others across Latin America, and indeed across the world, including the United States and Australia. It's a tomb where Chileans still flock to pray, to pay tribute to this tall, charismatic figure, famous for his charity work. 50 years on, people still remember how he roamed the streets of Santiago with his green pickup truck, seeking out the homeless under the bridges of the Mapocho River, to offer them a bed in the hogar, or home. But who exactly was this man, also described as scholar, teacher, youth leader, trade unionist? I asked a fellow Jesuit who personally knew him.
He made a very great impression as a man, certainly of deep spirituality. But what really impressed us more was the fact that he was so interested in social justice.
Cardinal Roberto Tucci met Father Alberto as a young theology student at the University of Louvain in Belgium in the late 1940s. Father Tucci shares with us his impressions.
And he was in Belgium in order to brush up his formation in social doctrine of the Church, because when, he had studied in Louvain as a young Jesuit, he finished his theological studies in Louvain and then went back to his country after 10 years of absence. And he found a country so different from Belgium of that time, because in Belgium, social justice was well promoted, but in Chile, the social situation was very poor, let's say. And so he started promoting trade unions, inspired, let's say, by Christian principles.
También en esto nos ilumina la figura del padre Hurtado.
He wrote books about justice, the problems of the homeless, the problems of the servants in different families, the workers in the factories. And then at the same time, he was promoting very strongly human Christian culture. He founded Mensaje. Mensaje is a kind of monthly magazine which is still existing, run by Chilean Jesuits, to spread Christian doctrine and most especially to treat also social problems of the country at that moment. So he's a very rich personality.
Poet Gabriela Mistral called him a natural Franciscan. His life story, with his ability to convince the wealthy to loosen their purse strings for the poor, suggests a trickier epithet, that of a natural Jesuit.
Very also convincing with the rich people, not all of them, but rich people were more or less, say, Christian in their mentality, to oblige them to discover the real consequences of their faith in Christ, which was to recognize Christ in the poor of the Chilean society.
A todos os quiero expresar mi amor en Cristo, mi cercanía en el sufrimiento.
But certainly what impressed us more when he visited us in Louvain was this main preoccupation of social justice in a very Christian way. I mean, he was always starting with the gospel, the fact that the poor is Christ, and that for that reason he was moved by his own faith to put his life at disposal, especially of the less privileged classes in his own country.
So as you said, he tried to abolish that gap between a Christian ideal and the reality of the workplace. He was ahead in his ideals, wasn't he, for the time in Chile? There was a huge social contrast in those days, no?
After the Vatican II, the Council of Vatican II, we are more or less, say, already in that line. So today it is not such a novelty of what he was thinking and doing in his own life, Father Hurtado. But at that moment of history of his country and generally the sensibility of the Christian Church for the social problems were not so deeply diffused as they are today. So I think that it is difficult to make a comparison. I mean, today he can move us, but it is not such a novelty as he was in his own time. His face, which moved him the most. I mean, he was a very spiritual person. He was very good in preaching spiritual exercises, both to intellectuals, to students in the university, and even to poor people. So you know that, for example, his own sentence. The Mass was his life. And his life was the continuation of the Mass. But he was drawing from a deep ignatience and Christian, let's say, spirituality, the force to face all those problems in which he was involved. Think that he was so young, I mean, when he died, I mean, 51 years old only. Yeah? And he has achieved so much, I mean. In a time when all these problems were not so largely considered in the Christian communities, I mean, in many countries.
And on Sunday, October 23rd, 2005, this man, who was once described as God's visit to Chile, became a visit to the whole world. Many thanks there go to Cardinal Roberto Tucci for sharing with us his precious memories of the second Chilean to be proclaimed saint, Father Alberto Hurtado Cruchaga. And that's all I have time for on today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now. And don't forget, we'll be back again at the same time tomorrow.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.